On today's show, presented by Prime Video, Houston wins a crazy one. The legend of Oakland U. Please don't change this channel. We say something nice and a homework issue in Ohio.
Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
This is America's tournament. It doesn't belong to you. It doesn't even belong to the NCAA. It belongs to all of us.
Russ Dellinger.
This is the second most chalkiest, you know, in the last decade or so as far as the average seeds making it to the second weekend. I think it's 3.3. It's chalky in here, Dan.
And SI's Pat Forty.
From 2015, when Kentucky was 38-0 and lost in the Final Four till now, it's diminishing returns. Nobody's happy. Everybody's tired of Cal's act, but they don't know what to do about it.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Prime Video. It was 4 days, I guess six, because we were watching and laughing in Virginia and stuff. But 4 days of March Madness, and it lived up to it. Favorites move on. First time in a while that we've had all the ones and two seeds made it. I really thought like about the 2 to 3 seed, it wouldn't matter between that and like 12 or 14. Didn't really pan out, but so committee, plenty of reasons to bash them. They did a pretty good job seeding the top teams. A lot of impressive performances, but a lot of good upsets, crazy shots, buzzer beaters, unexpected results, humiliating defeats, all the things we want. Crying band members, absurdities, folk heroes. I heard that Yale was too cheap to bring their band to Spokane. They've got the University of Idaho to be their band. You see that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Look, Ma, I got into Yale.
You're a general studies dude at Idaho, but you're repping Yale for the weekend.
I was in the Yale band. Yeah. And they go, "You went to Yale? Well, riddle me this. How would I not have gone if I'm in the band?" You're hired. A lot of stuff happened.
Oh, a lot.
Let's start with this bonkers game. We'll kind of just go through some winners and some losers here. We'll keep it casual. But this Houston-Texas A&M game that ended the weekend smorgasbord on Sunday night was as crazy as they get. Great game, in-state rivalry game. I'm sure they got huge ratings in the state of Texas. Houston, always solid all year, gives up an 11-point. Really, they didn't give it up. A&M just rallied. A&M got it done. Final 2 minutes to force overtime and foul all of the Houston Cougars out of the game, basically, including the amazing Jamal Shedd. The Aggies, Anderson Garcia hits a three at the buzzer. That isn't his thing. And then we end up with a walk-on for Houston named Ryan Elvin, who hadn't played. Had played like, I don't know, like 20 minutes the whole year. He was 3 for 4 from the free throw line for the season. And he has to hit one to stay with the Sweet 16 on the line. And he gets one of two and gets it done. One of the more bonker games I've ever seen. Pat, your thoughts on that one or anything else you got, but that one and the Houston Cougars moving on.
Yeah, that was beyond belief on so many different levels. For one, like, I could not believe Houston of all teams coughed that thing up because they are so solid. But yes, to A&M's credit, A&M did a great job taking it and making them cough it up. If A&M could make some free throws, they would have won the game. But A&M got 5 shots on the last possession. They got it down to a point where it was a 3-point game somehow. I don't know how, but they did. And miss, get a rebound, miss, out of bounds, or jump ball, get the ball back, miss, get a rebound, miss, possession to A&M. And then the out-of-bounds play for the tying shot. Tyrese Radford inbounded the ball and basically threw a sinker pitch, kind of like a sidearm sinker inbounds pass. It bounced one time at knee level. Anderson Garcia grabs it with the second left, picks it up, shoots it, falls down and is on his back at the time that he ties the game. And at that point, four of Houston's starters had fouled out, including Jamal Shedd, who is the everything for them, but also L.J. Crier.
Shedd was still there for a while of the
oh, that, the no, OT. You're right. You're right. You're right. Shedd did not foul out till overtime. You're right. You're right. But anyway, they like you're going into overtime right there. You're Houston. You are in complete shock. You cannot believe you have given this up, and you've got three of your guys have fouled out, and they somehow rallied in OT to win the game. And that Shedd just put him on his back and said, look, I clear it. I'll go one on however many I need to go on. And probably they should have run more defenders at him. But he made shots. He passed the guys for shots. Just a superhuman performance. And again, yes, Ryan Elvin, basically he's like the guy that gets in for 2 minutes at the end of blowouts. He's a senior. He's a walk-on. He's never done really much of anything.
Except Boyle Crawfish, Lady. Apparently.
What?
Apparently, Boyle Crawfish. There's apparently the first Google search image search that comes up, or one of the first ones that comes up, is him standing over a boiling pot of crawfish with a massive paddle in it. That's my guy right there.
Okay. Well, that and a career-high 9 points against Our Lady of the Lake in 2021. No, he's done nothing. He steps up there. Like, I can't imagine what he's feeling with your number one seed, everything that's on the line. And he misses the first one. He has to make the second one, basically, and he did. Just a wild, epic game.
What was the score when he – like, what was the situation? Because I remember, as I told you guys off air, when A&M – or when Houston was leading by 10 with 2 minutes left, I dozed off. So I missed the whole – yeah, all of
missed
this.
Missed the exciting
fireworks.
Part. Missed the fireworks. It was
fireworks.
A three-point game.
Yeah,
it was
okay.
A 3-point game. So he kind of needed to ice it. But, yeah. I mean, it was just – Shedd was out.
Right.
The other three
like – they had no ball handlers. They had no ball handlers left in the game.
They did not know how to pass the ball in. They throw it to him, and they get it. And it's like if A&M can get this to overtime, they're going to win by, like, 12.
Yeah.
Like, Houston is cooked. They got nothing. And one other thing. End of regulation, it was a – they called a jump ball.
Mm.
Or a whatever, possession arrow, whatever they call it. First, I hate the possession arrow. Cue my Dickie V screaming about the possession arrow. He's been screaming about it for 40 years, but they're not changing it. The possession arrow, if they don't call the – first off, it was a quick possession arrow. I didn't think it was a tie-up at all. I thought it was Houston ball. But by calling it a possession arrow, they stopped the clock. The refs stopped the clock for Houston to be able to run the play. Mm. If they had just let the continuation go, there's no way Houston gets a shot off.
Right.
So the ref call on that was literally now that kid made incredible pass, incredible shot, whatever. It all went out. But there were many bad calls this weekend. But that one was that was just insane. It was just an insane game.
Yeah. And that's one thing we've had a lot of excitement, obviously, but to have a true I think that was the first true buzzer beater of the tournament was Anderson Garcia's shot.
Yeah.
I don't think we had a true it didn't walk it off because it sent it to OT, but we had one. I was there when Colorado made one with like 1.7 left or something, but that was the first one where the ball is in the air at the buzzer. Very exciting.
Yeah, college teams like to shoot with a little bit of time left, either get the rebound or I don't know. The pros, if they got a tie game, the pros are just going with they want the Curry shot to hit the buzzer while it's in the air.
They hit more shots than the pros.
Yeah, they're more likely to hit the shot, not clank it off and some wild scramble and some walk on who they brought in to keep the GPA high. Is standing there under the hoop going, wait, what? And he puts it in. Terrific game. Who else you got? Who else do we have as a impressed you this weekend? Let me say this. We talked last week about some coaches that needed victory, like needed a big weekend. Three of them advanced. Matt Painter, Purdue, Tennessee, and Duke. So they're all doing pretty well. I thought it was particularly impressive maybe therapeutic for Purdue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They look really good, and they played really well. And they need
the Boilers.
I've never seen a one seed celebrate a victory over 16 quite like Purdue did.
Yeah, I was there for in Indy for the Purdue games, and I think the first one was cathartic, and the second one was like, all right, look out, we're coming. You know, like they got that Godzilla off their back, you know, destroyed Grambling. That was what it was. But then Utah State is a pretty good team. They won 27 games, and Purdue just absolutely destroyed them. And Zach Edey bends the game in a way nobody else does in college basketball because he's so giant, and Purdue just uses every inch of him and that advantage. You know, it's Painter's a little bit like Bill Self, where if I have a dominant big guy, guess what? We're throwing it in every possession, and you're going to have to deal with it. And eventually they'll run into some teams that might be able to deal with it. But until then, everything goes through Edey, and he's going to play physical, and people are going to fly off of him, and they're going to the fouls are unbelievable. Like every time Purdue plays, their foul advantage is massive, and it's driving people crazy. And that's going to be a real talking point, I think, in the Sweet 16, is Purdue shoots, you know, 9 million more free throws than their opponents. And it's because of Zach Edey, because he just dominates inside, and teams just they foul him or they bounce off of him. Those are your two choices, basically. So it's kind of fascinating to see. It's a very old school approach. Purdue dictates the terms of every game that they play as long as he's in there.
A lot of talking about Purdue, you know, blowouts. A lot of blowouts from the ones and twos. A lot of chalk. We talked about it earlier. Like one double digit seed made it into the second weekend. NC State, 11 seed, and then you have Clemson as a 6. But outside of that, right, we all have all 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5s. Yeah. So as wild as the college basketball season was, right, we talked about it a lot. Pat's talked about how crazy and unpredictable it is. I think this is maybe the second most chalkiest, you know, in the last decade or so as far as the average seeds making it to the second weekend. I think it's 3.3. In the average over the last, whatever, 10 or 15 years is more like 4.3. So it's chalky in here, Dan.
Very chalky. I think the only difference, and I don't have stats on this, but like it's chalky, but they're different teams that are the favorites than traditionally.
Yeah.
Like Kansas isn't in it, Kentucky isn't in it, Kansas, Michigan State isn't in it, Indiana's not in it, UCLA is not in it, Louisville's not in it. You know, a lot of teams that traditionally have been utter powerhouses aren't in it or didn't make it. But yes, it's. I thought the committee did a good job with the seeding. They did other things wrong, namely should have let more Big East teams.
Big East, right?
I think that's a fair criticism of them. The Big East looked really good. You were watching this thing, and then you're kind of looking at the UConn score, which like they seem to start every game 10-0, 7-0. And you're like, are we just messing around? Like some of those college football seasons when Alabama was just like, we're just playing for second here. What are we doing? Like, is anybody, the gymnasts talk about that when Simone Biles is in a meet, they're all silver is gold. They just go, beat all the other people. You feel good. So I think that'll be interesting. Can't not mention Oakland U. We'll get to the Kentucky side later. Mm-hmm. Jack Golke and his 10 three-pointers and then embracing the jokes that he's basically a regional manager for Enterprise Rent-A-Car or the D2 transfer and Oakland was great. That was probably maybe the most exciting of the first 4 days. Like it's prime time CBS. I think it was the highest rated game of the weekend. Trey Townsend is a great player for Oakland and Greg Campy's a great story. And then Kentucky makes, the perfect March Madness quote unquote villain to root against. Just watching Jack Gehlke just cook these Kentucky lottery picks or whatever they got is pretty hysterical.
Wait, Oakland was involved in the most watched game of the first round. So Dan, are you saying that people actually like to see mid-major little
guys? No, it's because there was an SEC team in it, Ross. It was all the people were watching Kentucky, and then people were like, what is this? We don't care. Yeah.
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 Yeah. That's right.
It was not a good weekend for the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, who was opined a bit about maybe we'd have too many automatic qualifiers who are not among the elite teams. Oakland and Yale did some damage to his league, significant damage. And yeah, the SEC in general, just a brutal showing. But yeah, the Oakland thing was just fantastic to watch. I mean, you know, and that's the thing about Campy's teams always, Dan, you know this, is they're always a really good offensive team. You know, they're skilled and they're going to score and they don't mind playing fast and they're not afraid when they get into the tournament. But the goalkeeper thing, it was like, wait a minute. The guy with the receding hairline guy is going to go 32 and shoot 23s? I was talking to Shaka Smart, about long story short, but anyway, why shooters shoot so much in warmups when they're already good? And he goes, you know, even the good shooters, you're probably going to get 4 or 5 3-point attempts, unless you're the guy from Oakland who shot 20. Yeah. 20 attempts from three. It's just classic. Chucker. Yes, absolute chucker, and somehow Kentucky failed to contest him.
My wife saw him on the screen. She doesn't watch a lot of sports. And, you know, the immediate reaction was, as you'd expect, he looks like he's 35.
He might be. Who knows? Yeah. Yeah. Hillsdale College.
Hillsdale College transfer. You know, Oakland's got a robust NIL program. Like, but he signed some deals. He had like a Buffalo Wild Wing deals and something else real quick, which is always great. Like, even if it was only him and his roommates get free chicken wings the rest of the year, so that's what? A win. That's a win. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to say about this movement to create a larger field or get. I mean, it's I don't know how you watch this event and say that it needs any fix, maybe some better committee work or something. But I mean, look what happened. We had this exciting tournament that CBS is putting out. Oh, this rating's the highest in years or whatever. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You know, they can work it. Gambling, I think, is part of it, but highly entertaining 4 days, all these dramatic stories, all these great stories. And like, I saw this note, Greg Campy, between the victory on Thursday night and the tip on Saturday, or just on Friday, basically, he did 30 media interviews. He was calling into every radio station promoting his school, right? Local around Michigan and all over the country, and he's calling in and he's doing 30. And like, it's Oakland University. People think it's in California. It's not. Like, it's a you know, predominantly a commuter school. It's a growing school, but like, this is your chance. Like, hype it up. He said, we sold $8,000 in merchandise from people in Louisville. You know, the Louisville fans were supposedly buying Oakland U merch to like.
I can 100% believe that. 100%.
Yeah. Like, how do you sit there? I don't care how much you care about money. Like, you have to be like those dudes from Billions or something, or like Wall Street, and go, I don't know. I think if we could only, I mean, like, can't you just be like, hey, let America have this. This is fun. Right. Like, this is part. Can't you see that this is part of it? Oakland. It's St. Peter's. It's Abilene Christian. It's whatever the hell it's going to be next year. Everyone loves it. Everybody loved the Oakland story.
Yes.
Except the Kentucky fans. But that's the point.
Yeah. Right?
They're paying their coach like three times the entire budget of the program. Like, if your head coach is making more money than what the entire program spends, you shouldn't lose. But you can in basketball. It's what makes it so great. It's just I don't know what Greg Sankey's phrasing quite is. I don't understand it. It's not just him. It's your mark. It's other people. They aren't acting totally alone. But my God. Get your head out of the books. Stop chasing every nickel and every advantage. Just be like, you know what? I get to work in an industry that produces this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I get to be part of this.
Yeah.
I need to be a steward for this. This is America's tournament. It doesn't belong to you. It doesn't even belong to the NCAA. It belongs to all of us. I know that's not, you know, somebody owns the damn thing, but it's too great to mess up just so you can get some
perceived advantage of one more team in. Maybe we get one more unit.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I how you could watch what we watched and say, now let's change it, just defies any sort of logic or enjoyment of the actual event. You know, do you really just not even enjoy it? And so you just
Do you have joy in your life? Do you have any joy in your life? You just sit there and go, I could, wait, there's a square spot over there on that baseline. We could sell an ad.
Yeah.
Look like a NASCAR out there or something. I don't know.
Reduce it all to an accounting question. Okay. But man, you're missing out. Man.
I know. Yeah. I know, you know, Sankey, obviously, because of his most recent comment or comments, has been the focal point. But as Dan said earlier, this is something I think all four of the Power Four commissioners believe, right? And Brett Yormark and Jim Phillips made that pretty clear in a story we published 2 months ago, that they think that it should be reevaluated and expanded to in some degree. So they all believe it. And you wonder, I don't know if it's the social media, like Twitter echo chamber, or if the vast majority, you know, of fans believe that it should remain as is. But man, the pushback we've seen on this issue is similar to the pushback we saw on some of the first CFP kind of suggestions from especially the Power Two, of whether it's the guarantee buy or the multiple AQs. Man, it's just like the fans of college athletics have like risen up, it feels like.
Good.
And again, I don't know if that's Twitter echo chamber or not, but it sure is loud the last few weeks on all this stuff.
Listen to it. Listen to it, college leaders. And if it is all for them, then they all suck, because it's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea to mess with this tournament. And I will say, they do listen to that sort of thing, because one of the anecdotes that Greg Sankey is fond of bringing up, as he is touting himself, and rightfully touting himself for not giving up on playing football in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things he said, you go back and they did a study of like a word cloud thing of when they announced that they are going to go forward with the season. And like the biggest words were hope and thank you and optimism and stuff. So if you're studying feedback, study this feedback too and listen to it.
Yeah, I just think you know, I went and watched the first round with my dad up in Massachusetts, and we're at you'd be shocked to learn we were at a establishment.
A
yeah, we're at an establishment. Had sandwiches and stuff. Captain Flagging down in Marshfield, Mass. Took care of us. So the whole place is full, and it's you know, it's the excuse to be able to go and drink during the day, and the whole place is whooping and screaming when it gets, you know, any higher seed. This is not college basketball Mecca. Most of these people probably didn't watch a whole lot of games all year. You know, we're not in Lexington, we're not in Lawrence, we're not in the Triangle. It's pro sports area, and everyone's going crazy for this thing. And it's just like you said, your wife's asking about it. A couple of years ago, my wife got totally into the St. Peter's story. You have this magical thing and you're trying to change it. It's like certain sports have things that make sense. They don't make sense, but this is what they are. It's like, you don't go to horse race and say, instead of a triple crown, let's have a best of seven. You don't say, like, oh, the Stanley Cup, you know, that trophy's kind of weird. Let's replace it with this. It's got more diamonds in it or something, right? You know what? No, you drink beer out of the cup. Like, you don't say, let's have, let's golf. Let's cut down on the majors or whatever, or let's do a shotgun start and no cuts and 54 holes. You jerks. Actually, they do that. And look how nice it's going. But an aside, you have this magical thing, and like, yeah, you'd have like Jim Boeheim or something whine about how he should have gotten in more years. Let's expand it, you know, whatever. It's Boeheim. Like, you guys, like, please don't mess with this thing. Because if they expand it, and I'll get to this Fran Fraschilla plan, which has zero chance of being done, but
but it's a great plan. They expand it. They will have more of the play-in rounds. It'll be Oakland U against another, what were they, a 14 seed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's one less Oakland U getting their chance against Kentucky. Mm-hmm. There's one less chance. Actually, there'll be a whole bunch of less chances. So they're expanding. It's going, it's expanding. Indiana State could have got in. Yeah, Indiana State could have got in. They would have played Oakland. And so only one of them really would have got in. Right. And that's what they're trying to do. And they're trying to ruin the fabric of this thing. And again, just for once, sit back and go, God, I can't believe I can be one of the stewards of this incredible event. This incredible, purely American event. And I'm not going to mess it up based on whatever the hell your reasoning is, which it just isn't there.
Well, I mean, I think the main crux of the reasoning goes back to conference expansion, you know, and it's, you know, you have a 16-18 team league and you want to fight to try to get access for such a big group, more access for such a big group. It's the same reasoning with the CFP situations and the multiple AQs.
They should be able to get the same number in. They just took other power. Like they should be able to get the same number in. There's not more power conference teams. There's two more power conference teams now than there were before expansion. The Big 12 added four teams.
Counting SMU. If you count SMU,
they lost
there will
two.
Be
so
five.
And then Washington State and Oregon State are out. Yeah. So they added three more teams. They just shuffled the deck, and now it's like a three-card Monty. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Let's have more 11s play 11s. Let's have more 14s play 14s.
Yeah, that is a three-card Monty trick. Like,
I don't know how
and again,
you can straight face
the other
argue
thing,
this stuff.
Well, the other fundamental flaw with the logic of that is that's a you problem. These conferences made those decisions. The Big Ten decided to go to that size. The SEC decided to go to that size. The Big 12 decided to go to that size.
Yep.
Live with it. Don't make that Duquesne's problem and Oakland's problem and Yale's problem and James Madison's problem. That's your problem that you created.
Fran Fraschilla's plan, if you go to 72, is the 16 teams that would have to play in the essentially the first eight. If you go to 72, you have a first eight instead of a first four. So there'd be 16 teams. Those 16 teams must be at-large teams. So you're not taking any conference champions shot away from playing in the real event.
Right.
And that should help. But again, if these people want to, they're grasping for every little advantage over poor old Oakland. Are they really going to go for this? I think Fran Fraschilla's plan, if we have to go to 72, they should do the Fran plan. Fran Fraschilla care, right? But I have no faith in anyone who sits there and goes, yeah, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
Wait, and ratings again, are up. Oh, $8,000. People in Louisville are buying Oakland shirts. We don't want that.
I mean, that's the thing. Yes, if you're going to do this, if you're going to screw up what was working so well, then fine. That's a way to do it. But there's still no reason to do this. You don't have to add teams. There's nothing from a public standpoint that is crying to say, gosh, we wish we had more teams in this. Nothing.
Nope, not really. And you're starting to see the pretty loud backlash. Dan, one thing, football kind of thing, because you mentioned Washington State and Oregon State and the Power Five and all that stuff. And I think it was right after we did our last pod, I was able to report out some new information on Washington State and Oregon State as it relates to the CFP, in the new CFP deal, new revenue distribution. But kudos to Washington State and Oregon State and the Pac-12. They at first were going to get around $350,000 a year in annual CFP distribution, which is the smallest amount of any program. They were basically going to get the equivalent of UConn. Those three were independents, and we're going to get about $350,000, while Group of Five teams made $1.5 million. And while, you know, former Pac-12 teams, you know, made 15 plus million. So it was a pretty big drop off, and they weren't happy with it. And they went back to the CFP before the deal was signed on Monday and negotiated an amendment giving Oregon State and Washington State $3.6 million each now. So a huge jump and an important one to note for the future. Those two teams still only about half of what they got in the Pac-12, but certainly more than the $350K, which did seem incredibly low.
They also landed they're at $12 million in counting in revenue from this NCAA basketball tour.
Actually, it's 18. I thought I saw. 18? Yeah, it's 18 million.
18. I'm
sorry. 18 million in counting,
and it's only going to two of them.
Yeah, that's right. That's beautiful.
Biggest Arizona fans are in Corvallis.
There you go. Yeah.
The Pac-12 started 6-0 in the tournament. They ended up, three teams are out, but Arizona's still in and still going.
It's looking pretty good. A lot of
money to coming to them, those two schools, right? They got the Rose Bowl contract and they got all this NCAA tournament money. And there's a lot of money to do some interesting things there.
They're like the divorcee, right? The guys are going for the trophy wife over in the Big Ten, and they're making them pay. You are paying. They got a good divorce attorney, and they are just sticking it to them. All right, we'll go to break, and we'll be right back, and I'm going to discuss real money making because I was watching the NCAA basketball tournament. I wound up on Yahoo Finance trying to research stuff. We got stock tips coming from the Sweet 16 or the round of 32 at least. Be back after this. All right, before we get to Kentucky and Michigan and Louisville and Dusty May and all the different sub coaching, the Alabama Grand Canyon game was absolutely bonkers. Charles Barkley after was hysterical. He said it was the worst game he's ever seen. It's just Grand Canyon played had no offense. They're just jacking up threes and stuff like that. A million foul. I don't know what happened. Its game was, it looked like trying to watch a washing machine. Just nothing made sense. Whatever. Alabama won. Mark Sears is absolute awesome. Mark Sears ranks only Jamal Shedd can I like more than Mark Sears. Mark was the only guy really playing basketball. I don't know what everyone else was doing, but there was a basketball game. But I didn't know anything about this Grand Canyon University. I don't even know that much about the Grand Canyon itself.
It's pretty big out here, Dan. It's pretty big.
Been to the Grand Canyon? Anyone?
No. Yeah, when I was like 7 or something.
Did it suck? I think it probably sucks.
No, yeah, I mean it's a large hole in the ground, but it's kind of an interesting large hole in the ground.
All right. I feel like you got to drive a long way to get there, so then everyone says it's good.
Well, there's like, probably some of that. I mean, like it's out there. It's up by Flagstaff. You know, it's not next to Phoenix, so getting there is a little bit of a chore.
Guys, I took vacation. I went to hike Mount Kilimanjaro and or something like that. Like I spent $25,000 this whole trip. And he's basically, and you go, how is it? He's got to say, unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. Like, you can't be like, it sucked. It was just a hill. Like, you got to be like, I watched the sunrise over Africa, changed my life perspective. It reset my, you got to, right? You can't just be like, I did this whole Kilimanjaro thing. Should have just gone to Punta Cana and the all-inclusive.
Is Grand Canyon that close to Grand Canyon University?
No.
No.
I don't think so, right?
Yeah. No.
Yeah. I don't know. No. Maybe the Grand Canyon is pretty awesome. Colin, our producer here, is saying it's great. I only
He's
see
got a nice picture of it.
I fly into Vegas, and then you know you're close. That's really it. But anyway, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Grand Canyon U, though, okay? And I say this all respect to all institutions of higher learning. I don't care where you get. I'm not snobbing it up. I don't even care if you go to college. You do great at any of them. But Grand Canyon has like 23,000 students, and then this online school, it has 118,000 students. That's a big school.
Yeah.
It has a thing called Grand Canyon Education. which trades under LOPE. It is a publicly traded company. LOPE, for the antelopes, the lopes.
Yes.
And you can buy stock in Grand Canyon Education, which is affiliated with Grand Canyon University. How affiliated? Well, let's say how confusing all this is. We've had every violation and scandal in college athletics. We now have an FTC complaint against the school. Okay.
They're like under investigation, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay, there's a new one. The FTC. All right. I don't know. We'll let the process play out. I don't know whether Grand Canyon's innocent, guilty, the greatest place, the worst place. I don't really care. But you could buy stock in a team. I was like, wait, what? You have 118,000 students and you can buy stock? The stock's up 25% in a year.
Hey.
Now, it's booming. This thing is, they're adding like 15,000 more students every year. So last night I'm watching college basketball and I'm like, you know, I'm like ready to put down, throw some money in on LOPE.
Mm-hmm.
First time I've ever thought about stock trading during a game. Early trading, it's down. So I was like, if they make the Sweet 16, this thing's going to jump, right? But they're down. They're down 85 cents.
That's because they lost. That's because they lost. Yeah.
We're going to find out what this game meant.
They lost the worst tournament game I've ever seen, too. I'm with Charles Barkley. That was horrible. I mean, that was the second round at Peach Jam where the winner advances to play Mean Streets and the loser goes to the consolation bracket to play team final. Like, it was a mess. It was a mess. It's just pure chaos, which is kind of how Alabama likes to play. And boy, did Grand Canyon say, buddy, let's go. Got here 47 fouls in the game.
Mm.
51 three-pointers were taken. 10 were made. That's not good. I'm shocked. There were only 28 turnovers. It seemed like it was like 48. But, I mean, it was just everybody flying around at full speed, running no offense whatsoever. They played hard. They tried hard. There was no lack of effort, but there was a complete lack of execution or plan. That's for sure. Mark Sears was awesome. 26 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals. He got Alabama through to the Sweet 16. But, my God, please don't ever make me watch a game like that again.
Speaking of pure chaos, you guys see the clips they'd show back of the Grand Canyon students at their at their gym. I mean, I wanted to be there. That sounds a lot of fun.
Yeah,
looks
their
like,
home,
look
their
pretty
home court
awesome.
They are famous for their home court advantage, their atmosphere, and
the Havocs.
That was cool.
They call themselves the Havocs.
The Havocs. Yeah.
So there was some woman, at least, I think it was a woman. We don't know. But somebody with a high-pitched voice was screaming. And it was getting picked up by the mic. It sounded like she was watching like a child about to get hit by a car. Like everything was like, whoa. Like, and so then people online, this Grand Canyon thing, I was down Grand Canyon rabbit holes. I was down the Grand Canyon hole. They're like, these are paid actors. They're paid actors. Grand Canyon's trying to pump the stock price and making it look like the fans were the wildest fans I've ever seen in an NCAA basketball tournament game.
Yeah.
Like they are going crazy when they cut to them and you're like, dude, it's 8-6. Like, okay, good play. But they're screaming.
They've never been in a second round game before.
Yeah, we've seen lots of teams not be in this. The Oakland fans weren't screaming. They were fun. They were cheering, but they were like, they had a little bit of chill to them. Like, okay, it's early. All right, good job. Wasn't like someone would miss a shot. There'd be a loose ball, and there's somebody screaming like this is a life and death who gets the ball. Like, the Grand Canyon fans are incredible.
No, they,
and so
they, fit
they were
with
saying
the
they were actors. They were could not be real.
Yeah, they're actors.
In fact, I mean, I can't confirm or deny that, but the school flew 200 of their students to the game, all the way to Spokane. Flew them in on the school dime to create that atmosphere. But again, you got the stock. Like it's just a whole how did. They're technically a not-for-profit because you can't be a for-profit in.
Right.
Remember we were like, University of Phoenix should join the Big Ten because they got like a campus everywhere.
Right.
every market, and they got that great facility in Glendale. They got the University of Phoenix Stadium. That's nice. You ought to, like, you know, they got like 1 million students. What is with Phoenix and these schools? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, they were just the students. They were not paid actors as far as we know. What a job. What are you doing for work this weekend? I'm going to cheer for this team. I don't know. I just got to paint my face purple and scream.
When it reminded me of their eruptions and stuff, reminding me of what you see from soccer fans in the stands when somebody scores a goal, like European soccer. That's what it looked like. They were just going berserk.
But there's not 40 goals in a game.
No.
Right.
Like, no. You should score about 40 times in a game, either a free throw or a basket. There was none of that. Every rebound, I mean, Grand Canyon, they showed up. Let me check the stock again. I'm going to check it at the end. It's early. It's only not even 10 o'clock. Let's see where we're at. Still down. No update yet.
See, no, they've depressed the market because of the loss.
Sell, sell, sell.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Coaching news. The big coaching news is twofold. Let's start with Kentucky. Pat, what do they do? John Calipari is not going very well.
The big coaching news is that John Calipari is still the coach, to the utter dismay of many of their fans. You know, I kind of think they've been at a breaking point for a while now, and this is just more breaking. But again, what are they going to do about it? The general reaction seems to be Kentucky doesn't have a sugar daddy who's going to come up with $33 million, and the school isn't going to come up with $33 million, and John Calipari is still going to coach because he's not walking away without $33 million. So a postseason that ended with a knockout in the first game of the SEC tournament and a knockout in the first game of the NCAA tournament that follows going 1-2 last year, lost the first SEC game, lost in the second round of the NCAAs. 2022, won one game in the SEC tournament, but knocked out by St. Peter's in the first round. 2021, they didn't go anywhere. They lost in the first round, and then they were 9-16. Since the pandemic, John Calipari's record is terrible by Kentucky standards. Absolutely terrible. He has won two postseason games, one in the SEC tournament, one in the NCAAs. They've lost to a 14 seed. They've lost to a 15 seed. And guess what? They're probably still going to have the most players drafted by the NBA in June. And that's where the disconnect is just so glaring and so galling for the fans. Is like, we've got the best talent. Why do we stink in every March? And, you know, that the easy analogy is Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher, which did swallow the pill and pay the money. But Calipari's done better than Jimbo ever did at A&M. But it's also Kentucky basketball, which has always done better than Texas A&M football. Kentucky basketball, this should not happen. This is Tubby Smith was not fired, but he was pushed out, like find something else to do after the diminishing returns from his national title in 1998 to 2007. This is the same thing from 2015 when Kentucky was 38-0 and lost in the Final Four till now. It's diminishing returns. Nobody's happy. Everybody's tired of Cal's act, but they don't know what to do about it.
Well, it reminds me of well, at least part of it reminds me of Nick Saban, Alabama football, right? They got the best talent, but they usually did something with it, right? They didn't really have a drop off. I mean, Nick Saban's teams up to the very end really didn't have a drop off, and they were consistently every year the most talented roster in football, and they made do with that talent. And I think that's the biggest issue right now with Kentucky is, you have, as Pat said, you've got the best talent, and you're not making do with it. It's crazy how many losses that Kentucky's had in the last 4 years. I think it's 46, which doesn't even that seems insane. But 46 over the last 4 years is pretty.
The derisive nickname the Kentucky fans gave Tubby Smith was 10 Loss Tubby. Guess what? How many losses Cal's had in the last 4 years? He's had
Yeah.
20, 46 guys.
I think.
He's averaging 11 12 a year or
so, 11 a year. So that's the problem. When you bring in talent, got to win with it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one thing to lose to like Trevor Lawrence, Clemson, or Joe Burrow, LSU. Not Jack Golkey. So, Pat, okay, so this lifetime deal was a terrible idea.
Disaster.
Okay, not a big
deal. Is it always $30 million buyout?
Yeah, does it ever go down?
It's bigger.
Perpetual?
Yeah, it gets bigger, right?
No, it will keep going down. It'll keep going down. But, I mean, it was up over 50
million. What, like as he gets older? As he gets older, it goes down?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
lifetime appointees are not a good idea. Supreme Court on down. Like, let's like, you need a retirement age here. I mean, Cal can just sit there and keep coaching until they fire. Like, what? I'm sure he is not. He's not having a great time. And not, you know, it's miserable. Nobody wants to be losing games and have people ripping on you. And you know, there's like some guys like selling shots to try to raise money for the buyout. I mean, they drink a lot down there. I mean, we're not, but seems like a long way to go. Seems
if they could skim off enough of the Kentucky Derby handle at Churchill Downs and just use that to get him out, that might be the way to do it.
$33 million, but it's hard to just sit there and be like, well, I'm not having a lot of fun. I'm going to walk away from $33 million. You know, doesn't seem like a thing.
Pat, you know that place better than most. Like, Mitch Barnhart, the AD, is, I think, the chair of the SEC ADs. I mean, he's the longest tenured AD, I think, in the league. He's probably the most respected. I'm guessing at Kentucky, he's got a good amount of authority to make the decision.
I think so. And again, the signs, the indications are that the university is like, we're not coming up with $33 million to
lifetime deal is
a
bad idea.
It's a terrible idea. Mitch Barnhart should be catching a lot of hell for that. That's the biggest problem here. What, you don't give those contracts.
We don't want him to go to Texas. You're to Kentucky. Let him go to Texas if he wants to go to Texas or he wants to go wherever.
Yeah,
you'll get another guy. Yeah.
Exactly.
All your guys win.
Like, think who you are. Don't panic because, oh my gosh, my coach who's good may leave. That's terrible. Terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's not lifetime deals. Don't do them, but they did them. All right. Meanwhile, down the road there, Louisville was targeting Dusty May of FAU. He ends up going to Michigan. I think John Beilein might have talked him into it. Ward Manuel goes down there and gets John Beilein. They get it done, and Dusty May is a Wolverine, and Louisville is looking for its next option. How upset were people in Louisville, and where do they turn? And can we get Will Wade back in the can I have that moment?
That's what Dan really wants to know.
Dan's can we get my man back? Come on,
you cannot have that moment at Louisville. That's not happening. He will not be the next coach at Louisville. Unless there is a complete overthrow of the university sometime in the next, say, 12 hours, which I don't anticipate, 24 hours. People were freaking out big time Saturday night. Big time freak out. There was, you know, a lot of indications Louisville thought they were right in there with him, thought it was probably going to happen, and then things were kind of slowing down. So it's like, okay, something's not quite right here. And what was not quite right was that Michigan was moving in. And Dusty had a decision to make, and he made it. And, you know, I think Dusty's a great coach, and I think he would do well in either place. I think it's a great hire for Michigan. Is this an indication that he would rather be at a place where he's not wearing the spotlight all the time? Maybe, because at Louisville, doesn't matter how good you are in football, basketball, if you're good, is always going to be bigger. At Michigan, obviously, that's not the case. You know, football monolith, and they would like to be good in basketball, but you don't have to carry that weight, so to speak, the way you do at Louisville. So yeah, no, Louisville's thing, look, they kicked the tires on Scott Drew just because, you know, there was an indication maybe you could take a run at him. He didn't take it. I'm not, he wasn't even offered, but they kicked the tires on him. And then they were all in on Dusty, and they thought they were going to get him. And somebody even okayed a setup up for a press conference at the Yum Center, their arena, and set up like 40 chairs and everything Friday.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
That was a premature move, clearly. But they are moving back to not square one, so to speak, but back to the list. And, you know, I think this is now a, we'll see. By the time this comes out, they might have a coach. But Shaheen Holloway, Josh Schertz, my guy from Indiana State, who I love, and I think he would be a very good hire. Pat Kelsey may be the third in line there. And the Louisville fans will hate all of them because they got their hearts set on we're getting a big timer. You know, we're getting Billy Donovan. We're getting Scott Drew. It's unrealistic. Doesn't mean you're not going to get a good coach, but they want to win the press conference and the games. They might just have to win the games and not win the press conference.
Yeah, who cares about the press conference? It's meaningless. You don't know. We always say we have no idea how these guys will do when they get their next job. It's a crap shot. But anyway, big get for Michigan. We will see. And I think probably a little something to it. Michigan's a very, like, it's a good job. You can win. Beeline took them to 2 national title games.
Yep.
But never had everybody screaming at you. Because it's not just at Michigan. It's like, it's a pro sports state, too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's just a lot of, you know, there's just, I mean, yeah, beat Izzo, maybe split with Izzo, make a couple runs. Everyone's going to be happy on all that. All right. We've said plenty of mean, snarky, outright grumpy things today, but it's time to find our happy place and say something nice, courtesy of our friends at Prime Video. Ross, Pat, it's time to be nice. Tell me something positive about March Madness over the weekend. What you got? Pat, you're a beacon of happiness.
I am at all times, right? So, we talked enough about Oakland, so I don't have to continue to sing their sonnet, but I'm going to talk about the literal largest man left in the tournament, the elephant in ballerina slippers, who is DJ Burns for North Carolina State, who is comically listed at 6'9", 275, is probably 6'9", 325. I mean, there is no way in hell that dude doesn't weigh 300 plus. And he's got NC State on this crazy, crazy run. They have won 7 straight must-win games. And you can go back and compare. All right, they won 5 in 5 days in the ACC tournament to get into the NCAAs. Compare that to UConn with Kemba in 2011. After the first couple in the Big East tournament, UConn was in the field. NC State has literally had to win every single game to keep going, and they keep doing it. And in the tournament, they get in, you know, they beat North Carolina to get the automatic bid. They're an 11 seed. Clearly, we're not getting in without winning that game. Texas Tech, my man DJ, 7-11, 16 points. And then against poor Oakland had no idea what to do with big DJ. 24 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists. He's got great touch. He's got a good sense of humor. He's got a quote, you know, said a couple of months ago, but it was fantastic, said, you know, I studied Akeem Olajuwon, but I ended up with Zach Randolph's body. And that's what he looks like. I mean, just a giant, round man out there who can really play basketball. And he played 42 minutes against Oakland. That is a lot for a guy his size. So enjoy the hot tub, the cold tub this week, and we'll see him in the Sweet 16.
I'm going to say something nice about Tennessee coach Rick Barnes, who gets blasted around every corner, it seems, for his record in March, whether it's late regular season, conference tournament, NCAA tournament. He gets, going back to his days at Texas, around halfway through his tenure at Texas, he's not been great right over those stretches. The NCAA tournament, over the last 12 tournaments that he's coached in at Tennessee in Texas, he's only gotten past the Sweet 16, or he's only gotten to the Sweet 16 twice. you know, so he's only gotten past the first weekend twice. And so this is the third time they're here. Tennessee, and he knocks off his old team, Texas, to do it, to get in there. But obviously the real test comes this next weekend for him to see if he can really throw the gorilla off the back. But at least he's gotten to the second weekend. So that's my say something nice for Rick Barnes.
That's nice.
Good for Rick. Been around a long time and a good guy for the media to deal with, that's for sure.
Awesome dude. And a very funny guy, like truly funny, not just coach funny.
Right. Yes.
Like, really funny. Yeah. Like really funny. And I saw a great something on Texas. Like we need to hire, Texas needs to hire guys that could win in the tournament. And they had picture of Rick Barnes and Shaka Smart as the top candidates. And so those guys can't win there, but can win some other places. All right. I'm going to say something nice about who I think's the biggest guy in the tournament is Zach Edey.
I guarantee DJ weighs more, but he doesn't.
All right, DJ. Well, Zach is big, and he just gets beaten on. I just like watching him play. It's a throwback game. There's nothing special. He's this just oak tree in the middle. I like his demeanor. I feel like everybody just rips him. He gets yelled at by the fans. He gets heckled by opposing fans. He's this stoic, kind of stoic Canadian. It just gets it done. I just love watching Zach Edey play. And I feel like this Purdue team just has just so much pressure on them. And that means the pressure's on Zach Edey to make something happen here. He's had really he's going to be a two-time player of the year. And as much as I love Jamal Shedd, Zach Edey's the player of the year. And so that's a legendary career, but it's got to get done right now. And he was all business this weekend. So I really like that whole Purdue program, what they're about and the way they carry themselves, Matt Painter on down. And Edey, I think, takes an unnecessary amount of abuse just because he's the big guy. And I get it. It's fun to yell at the guys. I'm not big on, you know, but he's still a college player, but good on Zach Edey. I'm not rooting for any particular team in this tournament, but I'm rooting for him. And I think he's carried himself exceptionally well thus far, and we'll see what we have it. So there you have it. Go ahead.
So he's a really impressive guy. He really is. He's thoughtful. He handles the spotlight and the pressure that's on him really well. As the whole Purdue program, they're incredible, given the flameouts they've had. They're still so open and accessible. I can't say enough really about how they carry the whole program, but Edey is the centerpiece.
And look at this program is the elite program in that area.
Yeah.
It hasn't broken through for national, but this is like forever Purdue sat behind Indiana and Kentucky and Louisville and, you know, even at times, you know, Notre Dame or Butler, whatever. Like they just built this program up and up and up and up. And here they are now where they're like getting the favorites pressure. So there you have it. We proved that three grumps like us can actually say something positive for once. Thank you to Prime Video. Find your happy place. Take the stress out of streaming with Prime Video. All right, let's. You got it, guys. Got anything else you want to close? I got one story to close.
How are your brackets doing? How are the brackets doing? Come on, Dan. You said you picked basically all chalk. You should be doing really well.
I probably did. Yeah, well, I didn't pick one. I only had three Final Fours. That's it. How's your brackets, man? Brackets are busted, man. Oh wait. Yours busted. Mine are busted. Yeah. No, I probably am doing all right. I don't know. I picked all chalk in the women's. We picked the women's bracket. And the first round, I picked all the favorites, except I picked Michigan State to beat North Carolina 9-8 in the women. That was my one upset because I know one of the players on the Michigan State team. So I was a little loyalty. And that was they lost. So that's what I got for not picking. And then Middle Tennessee won, but then they lost. So,
bracket's terrible.
Probably terrible. I don't even look.
We've got a kind of an extended family pool that I'm in, and there's 17 of us, and I'm tied for 12th, and actually only 16. One of them never filled out the picks. So I'm in the bottom quartile for sure.
Yeah. The Yahoo picks, the latest
Yeah, how
after the first 2 days, yeah, I was like third, I think, in our Yahoo. There was like 20 of us, maybe expert picks.
That's why.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, that was actually the first 2 days. I think I've slipped a little bit, but three of my four final four teams are still alive, and five of my five of my Elite Eight teams are still alive. So we're trucking. We could pick up some points here.
I just looked, actually. My daughter, who is in Peru, who pays attention to none of this, is in the 99.7th percentile of ESPN's pool.
Wow. Wow. That's no amazing. How.
What a fluke.
Where is she off in, like, the real countryside, too? Like, no?
Yeah. Oh,
she's
yeah.
She's, like, in the mountains, isn't she?
Yes, she's at 9,300 feet elevation in Peru, like farming potatoes, you know?
Nice.
All right, let's close up with this. WXIX News out of Ohio. I don't know. We can do People's Court this. Is this father a hero, father of the year, or not father of the year, or worst father of the year? Adam Sizemore in Oxford, Ohio, is accused of repeating his child's school to complain about the amount of homework. Kept calling the school. A father's growing frustration about the amount of homework his child's school was assigning has led him to be arrested. He repeatedly called the school and called the principal and threatened the principal, saying, essentially, if there's not less homework, quote, the principal, quote, better put his big boy pants on, end quote.
I wish my dad did this when I was in elementary school.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Then, if that wasn't enough, because the principal was non-moved by this too much homework complaint, Adam Sizemore started calling the cops to complain about too much homework being assigned at this school. Like, it might be a criminal statute. I don't know. He called dispatch 18 times, roughly, said the Oxford police detective, Adam Price. In the audio records from the police department, Sizemore can be heard becoming frustrated that dispatchers are not telling him their name. He was audibly frustrated. He kept getting the police chief's voicemail and that the chief would not call him back. And then this was a bad line. He can come to my expletive house. I pay for him. He can come to my house, according to one of the transcripts. After repeated calls, Sizemore did not get a chance to talk to the police chief, but he did get to speak with officers. He did.
They did come to his house, I bet. I bet they did.
Nice.
So too much homework. I mean, it's March. The kids are trying to watch the games. I don't know. Is this guy standing up for his kids, saying we don't need this much homework here, Oxford Public Schools, or not so good? Where, you know, education is a light, set the stage for a lifetime of learning, and let the teachers teach, and do not tell the principal to put his big boy pants on, and do not tell the cops, I dare you to come to my house. Essentially, Pat 40.
I'm always on the side of less homework, so I applaud the sentiment, perhaps not the execution. 18 calls or whatever it was to the police dispatch might be pushing it a little far at that point. What you need to do, Dan Wetzel, what you need, buy a big-ass dog and feed the homework to the dog. My dog ate my homework. Just say that every day. You get too much? Feed the dog the homework.
It's online now, man. They do it. Yeah.
Well, all right. Feed the dog the hard drive of your computer. Whatever.
Justice Dellinger?
Dad of the year. I mean, I wish my dad did that. I don't know about the calling the cops, though. That's kind of a little far. But hounding the school principal and telling him he better put the big boy pants on, that would have been great to have happen. Of course, if your dad does do that, or your parent does do that, then it might not help you with your relationship with your teachers and principal at the school, probably. But, you know,
it feels like a short-term solution. Like it's like when someone runs for student council and says, my platform as junior class president is no more homework or something, right? Not really going to work. I want to hear these 911 calls. You know, 911.
With your emergency.
My kid has been assigned geometry.
Could you imagine the operator? You again, like, sir? What? On like the 15th time. You again?
Yeah. Adam, my son. They want me to read the whole book.
Yeah,
the dispatcher. Sir, that's not an emergency.
See the number. Yes, Mr. Sizemore. Go ahead.
Anyway, that's, I mean, no one's going to believe this paperwork in the county jail. What are you in for? My kid was getting too much homework. Wanted to watch March Madness. He should have waited. I don't believe this is March Madness related, but if he had, it would have helped his case. I would have been like, okay.
Yeah, right.
Got to skip school. You got to not listen, you know, got to watch
cool teachers. Cool teachers put on the games in the classroom.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back later this week with more college sports news and notes. Continue to subscribe to our podcast. We appreciate you listening, and we will talk to you later.